Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours. In store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Charlie Bird's life and indeed his passing has touched a lot of people. Alan Garrigan. Alan, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi Joe, how's it going?
Good. You wrote a poem. When did you meet Charlie, or were you just affected by his work?
I was writing a lot of poems at the time. I had an MA from UCD. Now, obviously, Charlie had the patronage, the doctorate from UCD, okay. And I greatly admired him. You know, I'm aware of how popular he was, and he represented the Irish people. So I sent him the poem, and he said it was a lovely poem, but there was just a few details that he wanted to take out, so I took them out okay. And I revised it on that basis.
Okay. And you won't tell us what the details were, no?
Well, it was kind of like he was Labour. He was sure of that. He didn't want to be more politically divisive or anything like that. You know, he was a very straight-laced figure.
Okay. So, are you ready to you're a voice that Charlie would have related to? So off you go, Alan.
I have this poem is called "Light a Torch for Charlie Bird." Now, it's not the full rendition of the poem, but it's a section, but I had to cut it down for the purpose of this.
Do the full rendition.
We've got plenty of time.
Yeah, sorry. There's plenty of time right. The day that's in it. Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. Light a torch for Charlie Bird. Stately Irishman, born of Dublin, Sandy Mount, Washington correspondent, you sought the truth until final breath. A commanding voice, once vigorous, now expired. Let us remember the fire in your eyes. Light the torch for Charlie Bird. Charlie, a Labour youth trailblazing, fight-orientated pioneer, proud elocutionary, generational emissary, atlas of risk, a Fenian son running through streets, through darkness, bringing light. Speaking the language of socio-political liberation, Charlie Bird, unyielding frontrunner, you threw your phosphorine soul to the machine, challenging walls of Jericho, Dagon temple of injustice. Charlie, journalist, presenter, and democratic assimilator, saluting the steeple of free speech, summon the litany, reduce the commotion. Charlie, you spoke the language of amity and unity, resolute worldview, unabashed and tireless battle. Charlie, you struck a flip switch, drew a nerve, rallied for honesty, reform, and affirmational unity, facing down harassment, discrimination, and violence. Charlie, patron of University College Dublin and annunciator of a nation's free press. Dynamic elicitator whose rendition of a process for peace, Belfast Agreement 1998, glided into the threadbare pulse of Ireland's history, beckoning imageries of a new era. Charlie, your eclectic desire, courage that would not die, burning testimony, Dublin riots 2006, lifted spirits of a nation, describing the events of a zeitgeist, Gulf War, Syria, and earthquake in Haiti. Charlie, your unceasing effort opened a window, defined a movement, confronted the elan of human destruction and division, resisting crime, corruption, and fraud, NIB scandal 1998. Charlie, you chronicled the saga of life, promoting the cause of Irish freedom, sending a declaration out to oppressive systems everywhere, alongside geopolitical memoirs, Amazon, Ganges, and Arctic winter. Charlie, ethical iconoclast who dared, writer of compassion, protest, and popular scripture, he who lent reportage to people within and beyond the land of Ireland. Charlie, your unflinching eye like a sphere, globe, window of consciousness, portal to dream, deconstructed the ragged nexus imposed on landscapes war-torn and afflicted. Light a torch for Charlie Bird. In countless stars, sonorous and mystical, let the rhythm beat out, let the cadence resound, to memorialise Ireland's luminary correspondent, Charlie Bird. Unbridled soul must be set free, everywhere to fly, like the bird that soars, a flash of light that will not die, for his mind was not just a fire, but a torch that was kindled, never dwindled. Light a torch for Charlie Bird.
Charlie Bird was born in Sandymount in 1949. He was on Liveline on the 8th of June 2021. And the reason he was on, he had once again broken another story. And this was the bizarre story of the crew. Charlie knew who they were and told me who they were subsequently. But the crew in 1979, who basically told the Irish government that if they didn't give them £5 million, as it was at the time, they would introduce foot and mouth disease into Ireland. This is Charlie on that day, the 8th of the 6th, 2021, and I'll tell you at the end of the clip why it's so such an important date in Charlie's life.
Back in the late 90s, when I was breaking some big stories about National Irish Bank with my great mate George Lee, I got a tip-off one stage that both our phones were being hacked, possibly by former British soldiers acting on behalf of the bank at the time. And this tip-off came from Willie McGee. So I contacted him about 2.5 months ago, and I said, have you any stories? Would you like to talk to us? And bingo, lo and behold, he eventually told us this incredible story. It's just unbelievable. As you say, it was a letter received in late August 1979 in the Department of Agriculture. And I'll just read the opening paragraph, and it says, "Dear Minister, to get straight to the point, this is a demand for £5 million. During the last 4 years, the writer and four of his colleagues have spent considerable time with the communique. We have spent large sums of money researching this idea. And what they demanded at the end was that an ad be placed in the personal column of the Irish Times on the 1st of September 79. And this is what they dictated that it should be done. Tom Smith has read your message and will consider your proposals." So the man who put this ad into the back of the Irish Times was Willie McGee. He was a young rookie detective in the fraud squad, and his bosses sent him down to the Irish Times. So over the period of 6 months, this whole saga unfolded behind the scenes, and it never, ever got out. And Joe, just one thing. They were talking about 5 million. At one stage, they tried to up it to 10 million. In today's money, 5 million equates to nearly 30 million euros.
And what were they threatening to do, Charlie?
Joe, they were threatening to spread foot and mouth disease around this country. They said they had the wherewithal to do it, and they were threatening to do that.
That was Charlie on the 8th of the 6th, 2021. That was a Tuesday. On the Saturday of that week, I rang him to say thanks for coming on the programme, and such an incredible story, which also appeared, by the way, in the Irish Times. And Charlie said to me, "I'm just coming out of the doctor's surgery. And a couple of weeks ago, I noticed my voice was deteriorating. And I went to my GP and he said, I want to send you for a brain scan." He sent it for a brain scan. And I said, "Charlie, you sound OK. You sound OK to me." And he said, "No, he wants another brain scan, another brain scan." And that was the middle of 2021. And Charlie, by the way, was worried. He was very, very, very worried on that Saturday morning that he had an illness. And remember, his good, good friend, and you can say that of countless thousands of people, his good, good friend, Colin Murray, had died of MND not too long previously. So Charlie was very, very worried, and unfortunately it came to pass. John Kelleher is making a documentary, and was making it with Charlie, based on the Willie McGee story. I'll give you the name of Willie McGee's great book in a few minutes about his life in the fraud squad. John Kelleher, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
Can you tell us, I know, first of all, your reaction to Charlie's passing, because you worked with him, especially, I know you worked with him over the years, but especially in the last few years.
Well, I worked with him very closely in the last couple of years, but I worked with him first over 50 years ago. And I have such happy memories. Many of my happiest memories of my time in RTE was actually working with Charlie. All the producers wanted to work with him, because he was always, like as somebody said, I heard somebody say, I think it was George Lee, he was like a dog with a bone.
Yeah.
No, it was your poet earlier, actually, who made that point. And it's quite true. He always wanted to get the story. So he got, and he has got, the Willie McGee story. story, the story of the extortion attempt against the Irish government more than 40 years ago. And we have that in our film.
And the story is, as Charlie told it, bizarrely, in 1979, a group, do you know who they were, John? Obviously, I don't want their names. But do you know who they were? Were they a group or were they just a gang of ne'er-do-wells?
I don't want to give too much away because the film is going to be released. It's going into cinemas.
Oh, brilliant!
At the end of May. But in fact, at the time we started the story, we were not aware of the exact identities of the gang. But it's a true crime investigation that Charlie, and with great help from Colin Murphy, journalist and dramatist, as Charlie's condition worsened, Colin came in and helped to tell the story and unearth further key information. So that all is part of it. I mean, on the one hand, as I say, it's a true crime investigation, but on the other, it's the swan song, if you like, of a legendary journalist who wants to tell this one really fascinating story before he goes. And we all knew it was inevitable. You know, Charlie had a terminal disease, but his courage, his resilience, his energy, paradoxically, to get to grips with the story and to finish it was absolutely amazing. And Claire, you know, his wife is an associate producer of the documentary, and she was absolutely also a key part, of the enterprise.
And it's there's some irony in the week when we've been talking about, the country's been talking about the role of carers and the importance of carers, to see Claire with Charlie throughout his illness, and indeed they were married for over 10 years at this stage, was just a revelation, and Tiger was always there as well, as you know. So John, the book, by the way, is called Tales from the Fraud Squad, and it was Charlie who alerted me to this book by Willie McGee, and it is available, by the way, on Amazon or in your order through your local bookstore or local library. It's a fascinating book. And when if it's coming out in 8 weeks' time, John, it must have been finished over a year ago, was it, before it went into post production?
Oh, no. We were still filming right up to... Oh, yeah, we were filming 2 weeks ago. No, it's... I mean, Colm Quinn, who's the director, is putting the very, very final finishing touches to it this week. We have what's called Picture Lock on Friday, and then we'll be doing a whole lot of other things, sound post-production and special effects and a lot of, other finishing off. But it will be, as I said... It will be in cinemas, around the country from the 24th of May. And Willie McGee is one of the people in it.
Of course,
are many of the key players at the time.
And as you say, Charlie, right up to the end, he was, as one of our, as our poet said earlier, Alan Garrigue, he's like a dog with a bone. And he kept at it. And even though I didn't know on the day that he came on to Liveline on that Tuesday on the 8th of June 20, I didn't know his voice was going. It's only, you might detect it slightly in the conversation. But it was when he told me 5 days, and he became, as I said, he became extraordinarily worried. And that's, unfortunately, it came to pass. But the amazing thing is, John, that just as he sought in his work life, he sought out justice and he sought out answers and he sought out ne'er-do-wells, and he eked out goodness no matter where he went, be it with Niall O'Brien, trying to get Niall O'Brien free in the Philippines, his work on the liberation of that another remarkable man, Brian Keenan. But even when his illness struck him, he again went, despite what was happening to his body, he then went and he saw the gap and he went for to try and eat goodness out of it in terms of fundraising, in terms of trying to relate to other people who had a terminal illness, trying to relate to and put his arm around him, trying to relate. He kept saying it to all those who were in a dark place. I'm reaching out the hand of friendship, and that's what he did. So it's a remarkable achievement, and that's why I think if you look at all the social media today, there's one name that's gone to the top of every trending barometer, and that is Charlie. Just one word, Charlie. Did he? I know during COVID, John, he was down, obviously living in Ashford, and he didn't like COVID because he was locked down. And his grandchildren, I know they did their absolute best to see him, but his grandchildren were in a different county. It's hard to believe that 3 years ago we were told you couldn't go further than 2K and you couldn't go outside your own county, but and there'd be a Garda checkpoint. So you remember him, John, both professionally and personally?
Absolutely. I mean, the two are completely intertwined for me. He was certainly... The one journalist that I think I could safely say that I most enjoyed, yeah. I got most satisfaction out of working with. You know, we made a documentary nearly 50 years ago in Boston. We worked in Belfast, in London, all around Ireland. It was such a pleasure. But he was also such great crack. Yeah. The humour, you know, his sense of humour was fantastic. And then, of course, professionally, his hard work, his resilience, you know, and that amazing vigour and energy that he had and his nose for the story. He was relentlessly good.
Yeah, and enjoyable company and a very, very loving, very, very loving person. John Kelleher, Gura Míle Mahoga, John, and condolences to you. Michael, 51551, 0818 715 815. Or if you want to send a WhatsApp message on your memories of Charlie, 087-4848-888. Michael, your tribute, please.
Oh, what do you say about a trooper, superhero? Because the courage that man, we all know how good he was, if not one of the best, no offence to reporters today, but he opened... massive gate for young reporters on the way. He walked the walk and talked the talk. And then when he was interviewing politicians, movie stars, whatever you like to call, he took no for it. You know, he always looked for the answers. To your callers you had on there a while, hit it on the nail. He was an amazing reporter. But we all know how good Charlie was as a reporter. But we also have to remember when he got the illness. Sorry, George, young man. Because I know, believe me, I know what it's like when people are ill.
Yeah.
But he never fought it. Yeah. He never looked for pity. He actually done the opposite. He went out and he surrounded himself with the public. Mm-hmm. I think he done Kilpatrick. He never said, look at me. Look what happened to me. And we have to remember that today. Because, you know, we've seen his life, part of his life, as a young reporter coming through the doors, the gates of RTE and whatever paper, whatever place he worked for.
He worked in the Irish Times and the library of the Irish Times before that.
Yeah.
He worked on the building site of the Irish Glass Bottle Company near where he lived in Sandymount. That's going back.
And then
he worked, he laughs about this. He worked in Pond's cream factory, not the Pond's perfume cream or the cold cream. He worked there as an assistant to a chemist, believe it or not. So he had... He had a very, very career, and he always worked. He left school after his leaving cert, and bizarrely, and he writes this in his book, and no one would, and he spoke about it subsequently, because he felt he was no good at maths. He didn't get maths in his leaving cert, and he didn't get maths in his leaving cert. So that meant in those days, believe it or not, Michael, you failed the leaving cert, and. But Charlie spoke about that, but he was such a diligent worker. And he was he connected with people.
Yeah, and way back then, it's not like today where they have computers, phones. You had a pen in one hand and a notebook, and you had to remember everything. Coming over an interview, whether it be a politician or whatever, and Charlie had to remember all that and how how brilliant he was.
Yeah, and he
had charisma.
Yeah,
and this is the gift that Charlie Bird had,
yeah.
And he was able to carry that on right through. And even when he got the illness, he never faltered. He never wanted pity. He did the opposite. He went out and faced the world.
And even though
faced the people.
I didn't notice one of the symptoms of MND, motor neuron, is that you have this uncontrollable crying. Now, it's obviously people cry when they're fed up and depressed or to get news about a term. That's totally understandable. But Charlie used to have these bouts of uncontrollable crying when he didn't want to cry. And I remember we were at a charity event and he was crying and we were standing with him off out of the public eye. And people thought he just become overweight. He hadn't. It was a symptom, but he enjoyed people and people enjoyed him. Michael Gurumila Mahaka, Trevor Vaugh, good afternoon. One of the other things that Charlie did was, I know people approached him like yourselves, but the technology that developed during Charlie's illness. Trevor Vaugh, you're of voice technology. You were instrumental in that.
Well, we played a little part, okay. I'd like to think. I suppose I heard Charlie on the radio, like many others, when he announced he was diagnosed with MND. And, you know, it was something he said on that radio interview. He was accepting it. He said, like everything else, you have to accept things as they are. I suppose I'm a designer and an inventor, and I thought, you know, maybe there is a better way. And I had worked previously on a piece of technology for another lady as part of an RTE show called The Big Life Fix. And
I said, maybe that
will work for Charlie. And so I actually reached out to the production company, and the production company obviously passed it on to John Kelleher, who you just had on.
Yeah.
And I got a phone call one evening from John saying, Charlie'd love to have you out. Will you come out and talk to him about this? But he didn't tell me that. Charlie wasn't interested in banking his voice because he had a bad experience with what exists at the moment.
Okay, your line is...
So I went out to the house to meet Charlie, a bit awestruck, but Claire was there and Charlie was saying, nope, don't want to talk to him. I'm not banking my voice. I think John whispered into my ear, it's like, spark his curiosity, get him interested in this, find the journalist. And so I told him, this doesn't exist and this is brand new. And look, will you work with us to try it out? And he said, as long as it gives me back some of my humanity, I'll give it a go.
Okay.
And so working then with a company I work with, Merino Software, Keith Davey there, we got to work in building an artificial intelligent voice for Charlie, and that's the one we've heard for the last few years.
And then the other thing, because I remember Claire ringing me asking for access or to who she would approach, and it was Rob Canning, of course, the great Rob Canning, that we approached for Charlie Bird from the archives. So we were able to get his voice from the archives, and in that sense he was gifted because he had been a broadcaster, so his voice was there. But he took to it. Now the irony, Trevor, is that somebody who made his living from his voice, obviously a broadcaster, that the first thing to go, it seems, in MND is your voice. And are you thinking that he was resisting the loss of his voice? He didn't want to accept that this was going to go so quickly, which it did. And is that technology, is it now more, it's obviously now more widely known, Trevor, but is it now more widely available, do you know?
Absolutely. The AI world is moving so fast. Like during the Big Life Fix, when we first did it, it was at a point where it was okay, but you might be able to pick up some hints of the person's accent or their personality. Kind of fast forward a year where we went and tried it again with Charlie, it had come on like 500%. It was almost indistinguishable. But yeah. It took an expert to be able to put that together. Yeah. Today, you or I could sit down at a computer and build an artificial voice.
Incredible. In the 3 years since Charlie's illness, for the changes in the world are just incredible. Trevor, yeah, I presume you talked to Charlie when you did meet him, even though he was given out to you.
I was starstruck.
Were you? Okay.
I was starstruck. And I think that was the beautiful thing about being able to work with him. Charlie started broadcasting the year I was born, and I was kind of talking to family members, like, he's been in my ears since I was a baby. And just to be able to give him back some of that voice, that voice is so recognisable, was an honour. But he was a gentleman, and Claire was. And, it was great fun. Because he had lost hope, I think, in the existing technology. He was offered just the pace of change. He was offered a woman voice and an English man's voice. He laughed about that, but maybe was a little bit angry as well. And that moment where we gave him the artificial voice and he pressed play, his face, his expression, he was just overjoyed that he was able to communicate again. And I think that's the horrendous thing about motor neuron disease. Yeah. It takes away, kind of, in Charlie's case, he still has his thoughts, he still has his ideas, but he wasn't able to express it.
Okay.
So,
but he found his voice
in him,
through
he found
you.
His voice again.
He found his voice again. Okay, Trevor, go to Mila Maga. That's Trevor Evolve from Voice Technology. Joe at rt.ie 08724. 087-4848-888 is the WhatsApp. 087-4848-888 and then 0818-715-815. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815. Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815.
People are contacting us about Charlie Bird, who died yesterday. Vinnie Cairns. Vinnie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How do you want to remember Charlie Bird?
Well, I suppose I first met Charlie the guts of 40 years ago, and we got on reasonably well, but at the time of taxi deregulation, which was 21st of November 2000, Charlie was actually covering that story. And when the deregulation was announced, obviously there was a lot of tension, there was a lot of chaos. And
Taxi
drivers from all over the country converged in Dublin. The Dáil was surrounded, Dublin Airport was blocked for quite a while, and Charlie was moving between the two locations covering the story. But on the second day of the protests, we were at a meeting in the Montclair Hotel with some TDs and ministers, and I was asked to rush up to Kildare Street as there was an issue up there. And when I got up there, there were thousands of taxi drivers, obviously, in Kildare Street. But Charlie was and the crew were moving the boom out and trying to get some sound bites.
Okay.
And somebody grabbed the boom and told Charlie where they were going to put it.
Okay.
And so when I arrived there, I just said, lads, for God's sake, we're trying to get the best side of the story out here and get our point across. And I asked the two lads to move aside. And I then had a chat with Charlie and I said, look at Charlie, there's a lot of pressure here. We're really trying to get our side across. And it obviously wouldn't fare well for us if that was to be reported in that manner.
Okay.
So I said, look, we're quite happy to give you any interviews and give you our side of the story. And in fairness to him, there was a human side to Charlie. He said, he says, I appreciate that. And it's very early in the day and I can understand the tension that's running between the members. So from there on in, Charlie got first dibs on everything. And we'd ring Charlie anytime there was a meeting, and he was straight out with the news then. But he was a people's person, and he always remembered names, and he'd always recognise you no matter where you were. And I've met Charlie on a few social occasions in different places. But the very last time that I've seen Charlie was as I'm an ex-army man myself, yeah, so the Army Veterans Associations, a couple of the associations from all over the country, but our group of over 50 went down to Mayo for the weekend and joined the Climb for Charlie. And it was such a momentous event to really mark a man who was a people's person. He really was for the people. He really gave the story as it was. He was grounded. My condolences to Claire and his family on such a sad occasion. But
And Croagh-Patrick was such a monumental logistical effort. The army were involved. They got the pipe band. I think it was a Clew Bay pipe band up to the
for the first
time up to the top of Croagh-Patrick. All the equipment. Eight runs in an army helicopter it took just to get the equipment up, and then the people, the lads, and the musicians climbed with Charlie. It was he never thought small. He thought big, and it was an incredible. It was so metaphorical in terms of what he was doing, and then to actually do it through his illness, his MND, was incredible, absolutely incredible.
Joe, it was never just about reporting. He really wanted to get deep into the story. He wanted all the angles of the story. So it was a. You know, it wasn't just anything with Charlie was never a soundbite. It was always a pretty detailed report on what was happening on that particular day or what was happening in that particular story. So journalists like Charlie are few and far between.
Yeah.
And as it was said earlier on, it's probably a great mark for up-and-coming journalists to aspire to meet those standards.
And
like, his ethics were second to none.
And then he had a great team around him in the newsroom, the great days of Ed Mulhall,
Joe
O'Brien, Sean O'Rourke, the list guy, Ray Bourke, an incredible group of people who were all...
And Joe, in them days you had a crew over you, so you were never out on your own. So
yeah, and crews loved him as well. Finny, good to meet you. That's Finny Cairns, former Vice President of National Taxi Driver Union. Let me go to TD for Limerick City, Willie O'Dea. Willie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Willie, you've been... I'm looking at your career as TD for Limerick City and your career in politics, different iterations of that constituency geographically. You were almost a contemporary of Charlie's, were you not?
Yeah, I was a few years younger than him. It's obviously a very, very sad day because my memories of Charlie go back a long, long way.
Yeah.
And you know, he was a very good friend of mine. We often chatted privately on the phone and in person sometimes, had a cup of coffee. And he was it's only fair to say he was a marvelous journalist, but an almost supernatural ability to winkle out information that other journalists couldn't get. I remember the many crises that bedeviled Fianna Fáil during my long period in the Dáil. Charlie would come in, the places for the journalists, obviously, and no matter how friendly you are with a journalist, well, the journalist is a journalist at the end of the day, and they have a job to do. But Charlie had a way, to sheer force of personality and having the crack in the banter and a few laughs and things, he had ways of getting information which, the mainline journalists certainly wouldn't be able to get. Yeah. And of course, he was an outstanding character, but his ability as a journalist was really second to none.
And then his raising of his enforced illness. Nobody knows why MND befalls an individual, but when it did befall him, and he always had his hand out to other people who were going through MND. He knew he was in the public eye, so he had an opportunity. The illness was debilitating, but he had the opportunity to try and raise the issue, and he did. He saw the opening, and he went for it.
Yeah, it's a horrible, horrible disease. I really pity anybody. I've had occasion over many years to visit a number of people at hospital who are suffering from that particular condition. It really is a horrible disease, and the natural instinct when you're diagnosed with that disease and you know what's coming is to sort of retreat into yourself, of isolate yourself from the public. I mean, it takes a certain type of individual to go out and do what Charlie did, knowing that he was literally living under a death sentence, and with all the debilitating debilitating effects of that disease and the loss of the power to communicate, etc. I mean, you couldn't speak highly enough about the man. I mean, really and truly, I mean, it's my admiration for him is boundless.
Okay, well said and well remembered. Willie O'Dea, TD for Limerick City, Fianna Fáil. Kevin Baran, Kevin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And it's the BI that brought the BIR.
The BIR, exactly. Yeah, the brothers. We were in the Oakland CBS in Mount Marion in the National School Park.
Okay.
And when they were heading towards the primary cert, I think you had to sit alphabetically in the class for the primary. So we were put sitting alphabetically. So I ended up beside Charlie. Now we wouldn't have had a massive amount in common. I was more into sport and all that, and he would have been into reading and all. But we got on extremely well, you know, and I'd say we were both average enough students, Joe, and I used to wonder, he did these massive English compositions and he'd get massive marks for them, you know, and I'd be getting 41 or 42 and he'd be up in the 80s, and I was saying to myself, hey, the hell is he doing that? And then it dawned on me, I think his dad worked in the Irish Times, and I said to myself, I think that lad's dad is helping him do them. Maybe I was wrong, but he was a lovely fella.
But Kevin, he said of his school years in his autobiography, this is Charlie Bird, he said, if my school years were anything to go by, I was determined to achieve very little in life.
Well, I suppose.
But you say he was, even at that stage, he was very good at writing in English.
Yeah, exactly. He did very good at English compositions, exactly, and that would have been his forte, you know, and was also a very good speaker, you know. I met him a couple of times, Joe,
in
Stillorgan Shopping Centre and in Donnybrook, and it was him that actually went out of his way to come to me. You know, I'd be saying to myself, oh, I'm not going over there, big radio and TV star, you know.
Yeah.
But he spotted me on two occasions. Now, this would have been shortly before his illness, so it was still 50 years since we had met, you know. But on both occasions, you know, the little car park opposite Kiley's and Donnybrook.
Kiley's now gone.
He was parking his car one there, and I was walking across, and he went out of his way to make sure he came and said hello to me and all that, you know.
And you ended up at the fire brigade.
I did, so. I ended up for almost 40 years in the fire brigade. And again, when we were speaking in the car park, I had told him that, you know, and he got extremely interested because of the Stardust thing, you know.
Yeah, which he reported on, and which he's been with, and there's some irony in the fact that the Stardust inquiry, inquest is coming to an end in very, very shortly in the centre of Dublin. And indeed, Antoinette, who everyone knows, and indeed her mother from the Stardust, will be one of the speakers at Charlie's funeral on Thursday morning at 11:30 in the Mansion House in Dublin. Kevin Baran, good to meet you, Margaret. That's Kevin Baran. Michael English. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And how did you, as a musician and a songster, how did you become involved with Charlie, Michael?
I met Charlie many times, Joe, at various functions, and then was very honoured when his people contacted me to compose a song in connection with Charlie's campaign, Climb with Charlie. So I sat at the piano and I composed the song, and then I got the idea that I would love to have a choir of his colleagues at RTE, of which you were very kind to take part in, and all of Charlie's colleagues got together and we recorded the song in RTE, and then at the very end we all got a great surprise when Charlie came in himself and spoke to us through his machine that he had at that time. But he was a beautiful man, somebody who I looked up to a lot. I mean, he never, ever thought of himself. It was always about everybody else. And even through his Climb with Charlie campaign, it was always about speaking to others, helping others. And he would phone me up in the early days, and we would have chats. And he was an amazing man. And I was very, very honoured to be asked to compose the piece of music. Very honoured.
And here it is, Michael, and thank you so much. It's a lovely piece,
John.
And it was such a wonderful, wonderful day in Studio One over in the Radio Centre. Here is Michael English performing Shine a Light, in the, recorded live in the Radio Centre with the most odd-looking group of people who hadn't got a note in their heads between them, including myself, but aided and abetted by the RTE Concert Orchestra. I'm especially hearing a lot about MND and people, and Charlie did so much about MND and trying to raise funds for research into MND, that we, I would really, really appreciate if we could talk to the family of somebody going through MND and how we can raise the awareness, and that would be Charlie's legacy, which you would want to continue. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 087 4848888 for the WhatsApp audio message, and 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Paul, good afternoon, Paul. You want to remember some of the stories that Charlie Bird, and indeed with George Lee, broke, and the newsroom in RTÉ. Go ahead, Paul.
Hello, Joe, and it's lovely to join you on today. I mean, when I was growing up, Joe, he was just such a constant voice in my home. Mm-hmm. And such a remarkable voice, and such a remarkable name as well, let's be honest.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And he was, you know, every time you heard the voice, he had such great authority. And I was just thinking back over the stories, Joe. I mean, you grew up in the 80s and 90s in Ireland. The news environment was totally different to what it is now. I mean, you were reliant on RTÉ, you were reliant on maybe a small number of newspapers. And someone like Charlie Bird, he was a very, very important person in what you might call, I think, national life, for want of a better term. Okay. I mean, I can remember, Joe, at the 80s and 90s, I mean, the Troubles. I mean, he was so, he had such remarkable authority, and people trusted him so much. And I think, to be honest with you, Joe, I think he understood the North and understood Northern politics very, very well. He managed to win the trust, of course, of the Provisional IRA. And that, of course, there's been a lot of talk about that the last number of days. But I remember him breaking those stories, and I remember just how much people trusted him, Joe. And I think he just left a fantastic legacy. I think as well, Joe, if I can say, I think he was honest, and I think he was brave. And sometimes, let's be honest, not everyone in the establishment is going to like it if people break some of the sort of stories that he broke. Remember, of course, the Stardust, and of course, remember the Ansbacher scandal. And, you know, I think he was just a tremendously brave voice. I think as well, Joe, and
the National Irish Bank scandal.
The National Irish Bank, absolutely. And to be honest, Joe, I mean, I and we got to be frank about it. I think some of that wouldn't have gone down very well with the powers that be. And I think it's worth remembering. I mean, obviously today is a day for remembering Charlie Bird, but it is also a day for remembering a lot of the work that he did. And sometimes if you challenge the establishment, maybe you're going to ruffle a few feathers, and maybe sometimes people in power aren't going to like that. But I just think what a fantastic voice. And I remember as well, Joe, you know, his great way with people and his great way to entrust to people. I think he very much spoke for the Stardust families. He didn't just tell the story. He told it from their point of view, I think. So I just think what a remarkable man, and what a remarkable legacy.
And that's a lovely segue. Appreciate it, Paul. Thank you so much. Into Lisa Lawler, of the one of the survivors, the family survivors of the Stardust tragedy. Lisa, Charlie Bird was there. He was reporting. I think Ray Bourque was with him as well at the time, the great Ray Bourque from our newsroom. They were reporting from the ruins of the Stardust on the Saturday morning. And Charlie stuck by the families over the years.
He most certainly did. Charlie never had to be asked to come anywhere, to turn up. You know, we always knew that he would be there. He was a huge part of our fight and the struggle that we've had. He really, really was a huge supporter. So empathetic, you know, just, you know, he was just a lovely, lovely, lovely man. Only 3 weeks ago, we seen him again at the vigil in Stardust, you know. What a man.
And then
very sad day.
And I think it was last year when he spoke the vigil, he spoke through his iPad, obviously. But he was obviously deeply moved, because it was such an enormous tragedy in the history of this state, not just for the enormity to the families, but the effect it's had on people. When is it? I know the closing arguments are being made, Lisa. Do you know when the inquest will finish in the Rotunda?
No, we're not sure now when that will finish, but it's very soon.
Okay. And what's that been like for the families?
Well, I suppose anything like that is going to be very, very difficult. It's going on months now, you know, and we have to take into account that this is going on 43 years, you know, as well. So, but yeah, it's been tough, I have to say. Very, very tough.
And it was, ironically, it was one of the first issues that Charlie Bird covered in his long career here in RTÉ, was that a horrific, horrific fire. Thank you. Thank you, Lisa Law. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Paul. Thanks very much. Paul. Thank you, Joe. Yeah. Have a great day. Bye.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. Joe at rg.ie 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
There is, by the way, a beautiful tribute to Charlie and the Irish Motor Neuron Disease Association. Lillian McGovern wrote it. And also, I've tweeted their website, and maybe people would spread it around on the day that's in it, because they're always in need of donations, which are for one, helping families and those who are suffering with MND, but also for research into this area, which has been neglected over the years, not through anyone's fault, but now because of people like Charlie and others as well raising the issue, it is in the public domain. So I've tweeted that at Joe Liveline. Where's Danny Tiernan? Is in Boyle and Roscommon. Danny, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Your tribute to Charlie Bird.
Oh, Charlie was unique. He was a reporter that everyone trusted, you know. As soon as Charlie started looking into a subject or something, you felt, you know, you knew you were going to get the truth. You knew you were going to get the answers. And I remember when he was in South Africa, when the South African people got the right to vote first, and he spoke to Nelson Mandela. I felt, you know, you were standing beside him when he was talking to Nelson Mandela. He had that aura came off him, you know, that you were there beside him when he was talking, or when he was reporting on something. You could trust him.
Yeah.
And you knew what you were getting from Charlie.
Okay.
You were getting honesty.
Yeah. And he managed, he did manage, and he tells the story in his biography of Nelson Mandela, and Charlie was going down to report. He says, the media line stretched down the small hill. Most of the foreign journalists, including the RTE crew, were at the end of the queue. There was great excitement when Mandela's motorcade arrived shortly after the polling station opened at 7 a.m. Remember, this is the historic elections in South Africa after Nelson Mandela's release from his unjust incarceration. The man who was on the verge of becoming president of the new South Africa stepped out of his car. He moved slowly, but had smiles for all around him. We'd been told that he would go straight to the main door of the polling station, but Mandela had other ideas. He walked slowly around the side of the building to where Dube's grave was located, out of the darkness into the glorious light, the inscription on the headstone read. When Nelson Mandela had finished paying his respects, he started to walk back towards the polling station. But his route meant that he was walking alongside the media queue and walking from the back of the queue upwards. Several handlers surrounded him. I saw my opportunity and shouted out a question. He stopped, looked in my direction and came over. "Can I ask you," said Charlie, "who will you vote for today?" A broad smile came over his face. "I've been agonising," said Nelson Mandela, "over that question," he responded, "when I decided it will be his secret." In his autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom, Nelson Mandela wrote about that exchange. "Before I entered the polling station," Nelson Mandela wrote, "an irreverent member of the press called out, 'Mr. Mandela, who are you voting for?' I laughed. 'You know,' I said, 'I've been agonising over the choice all morning.'" So Charlie Bird, in Nelson Mandela's eyes, which is a great accolade, was an irreverent member of the press who shouted out to Nelson Mandela, "Who are you? Who are you voting for? So it's he was there. Charlie was there, and he was never shy. And his voice, as someone said, both his name and his voice were brilliant. And where's Tommy? Tommy, thanks, Danny Tiernan. Tommy, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
You tell us how you met Charlie.
Oh, it was December 21, I think it was. And the 10th of December, I seen him on the Late Late Show, and he'd said he'd mentioned that he was going down to Vicky Phelan on the following Monday. And I was a big admirer of Vicky Phelan, and I always wanted to give her flowers. And through a friend of a friend, I found out where Charlie lived in Ashford.
Okay.
And I drove down to his house.
Okay.
So I had flowers, two bouquets of flowers, and I went to Charlie's house. I seen lights on the in the back of the house, and I rang the bell, and I heard a dog bark, and I said, "Well, someone's home." So Charlie himself opened the door, and I had a bunch of bouquet of flowers, and I said, "How are you, Charlie?" I said, "My name is Tommy." I said, "I run a flower stall in Palmerstown." I said, "I heard you're going down to Vicky Phelan tomorrow." And he said, "I am." So I said, "Would you bring down a bouquet of flowers for me to her?" And without a blink or any surprise in his face, he said, "Of course I will." So he said, "They're lovely." So I said, "But they're not for her, Charlie." I said, "They're for your wife, Claire." I said, "I have Vicky's flowers in the car." And I went and I got them. And I said, "Thanks very much." I said, I didn't want to put you out." He said, not at all. So I said, "But Charlie," I said, "I wanted to say something to you personally." Himself.
Okay. Yeah.
So I said, "You're a great walker and you're always around the Devil's Glen, because friends of mine in Wicklow say
you see him.
So I said, "Charlie, you know when it's windy and it's raining and you're walking and you say to yourself, do you know what, I've had enough of this now, I'm going home." I said to him, "Charlie," I said, "that's not the wind." I said, that's the breath of hundreds of thousands of people you're feeling, willing you on. And with that, tears come out of the man's face, and I said, "Jesus Christ, what am I to say?" And I shook his hand tightly, and I said, "Charlie, look at yourself." And he said, "You too." But it must have touched him, because on the Monday, he went down to see Vicky, and he was asked by reporters, "How did the meeting go?" And he said, "Went terrific, and they had scones and all that." And then he recanted the story of me arriving at his door, and what I'd said to him. And
lovely gesture.
I just wanted to say to Claire, his family and his colleagues, how deeply, deeply sad I think everyone that followed Charlie. And I remember Charlie from when I used to walk in my mother's stall in Grant Street, and he'd be rushing around the doll, you know, like his feet was on fire. And I'd say to him, and he knew Charlie, he looked back, you know. And I was only a nipper then.
Yeah, he was such a constant feature, especially around that part of the city and indeed beyond, and even that changed in the last few years of life. Tommy Gurumina Market, Trish Buckley. Trish, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. And your father died with MND.
He did. My lovely father passed away in 2008. And at the time, as I was telling one of your researchers, you know, this sounds mad, but like, we never really heard about motion neuron back then. Yeah, there was only 36 patients in Ireland who were diagnosed with motion neuron at that time. And to be honest with you, we were hoping, when he was diagnosed, we were hoping that it was cancer. And that's an awful thing to say, not taken away from cancer. But when you get diagnosed with motion neuron, there is nothing they can do. It's just a slow, horrendous waiting game for the patient to die. And for Claire and their family, I was thinking of them over the last couple of weeks. And I just know, and all of us know in our family, and we were lucky. My mother was wonderful. My brother left work for 18 months. He did a carer's course. And I would go down at weekends and take over, and my younger brother. So we were able to look after my father at home with the amazing help of Thelma Rutledge, who is one of the motion neuron. There was only two motion neuron nurses in Ireland that J.P. McManus, a wonderful man, funded, because unfortunately one of his friends died, and he thought, we need to get nurses on the road. And Fidelma and her colleague would go the length and the breadth of the country. And they used to come to the house, and, you know, they were just such beautiful nurses, and like all our nurses, in they're wonderful people. But to deal with motion neuron was so difficult, because your clients near the end, depending on what type of motion neuron they had. But my father had, similar to Charlie, the upper bulbous, and he lost his voice. Yeah. They were peg fed, so, and they lose their dignity, you know. And it's just so hard to watch And, you know, each month they just deteriorate and there's nothing you can do. And they're so fully aware of what's going on and it's so frightening for them. But, you know, you're just waiting for them to die. And that's the hardest part, you know. And there's no cure and there's nothing to slow it down as such. Now, it has improved, I should say that.
Yes,
everything has improved and, you know, and thanks to Charlie, he was amazing. And he did shine a light on the Motor Neurone Society. He did bring awareness to everybody because years ago we didn't really know an awful lot about it. And thanks to Charlie Bird, we do now.
Yeah.
And, you know, Father Tony Coote, another wonderful, beautiful man, that walked the length and the breadth of the country. There's a fundraiser going on in Sligo. I'm not going to bring up fundraisers at the moment, but there's a wonderful fundraiser going for a lady whose husband is, I think, running 100 kilometres. Quite a young lady in Sligo. It's on, I'm sure it's on the Motor Neurone page. And they've raised so much money at the moment. And I see firsthand where the money goes. The Motor Neurone Society came out, gave us whatever we needed.
Yeah,
a bed, a hoist. They helped us get grants to make the bathroom bigger. No matter what we asked, we got. And they were a friendly ear. You could call them. And if we felt that Dad needed more help, Fidelma would leave wherever she was and she'd be at the house. And she was so calm because it's such a frightening disease. You don't know what's happening, you know. And for those nurses to come out and just reassure you and calm you, they were just, I can't thank them enough. But today it's all about Charlie and, you know, and his poor lovely wife, Claire, who looked after him to the bitter end, and his lovely dog. We just want to say thank you, Charlie, and we will continue to fight to raise more funds. And in fact, you know, I'm going to try and organise a show and we will definitely go out and raise more funds for you, Charlie. But today is about him and may his gentle soul rest in peace.
Beautifully said, Trish, beautifully said.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Brian Sheehan was co-director of Yes Equality, which Charlie Bird was heavily involved in, Brian.
Yes, he was, Joe. I mean, it's hard to remember now that at the beginning of 2015, we were starting out in the referendum campaign. No journalist or commentator thought we'd win, and we thought we could, but we knew we had to reach out beyond talking to ourselves. And we had great people who came in, the late Noel Whelan, the late Bride Rosny, but they suggested Charlie. And Charlie came, he said yes instantly. He did the launch of Yes Equality, the campaign group. And then he, like, using his extraordinary journalistic skill and his incredible decency, he went around the country hosting town halls where people who had never spoken before about being lesbian or gay spoke about it, as did their parents and families. And he created an extraordinary dynamic of having untold stories told again. And I think people trusted him. He'd been in their living rooms for years on the news. And when Charlie said something that this is the right thing to do, people listened in a way that we'd never have been able to reach. And he was extraordinary. And it was just that incredible decency that came across. And the tirelessness with which he worked with on something because he thought it was the right thing to do, the just thing to do.
And he threw himself into it and he put together a book, Brian. I remember that. Because
he was
evangelical about the book. He made sure we all got it, we all read it, and we all spoke about it.
Yeah, Charlie, as you well know, was, I think tenacious would be one of the great words you'd say about Charlie.
Yes.
And every time you'd meet him, he'd ring you up and say, I have a new idea, this is what you have to do. And he'd say, you have to meet me tomorrow. And it became a book. And what happened was he went around the country and he was astonished with the stories he uncovered. As he said, they were hidden in plain sight in front of him, that he didn't see these things as he went around the country. And I think he was on one level sort of shocked and surprised that he didn't see this other Ireland in front of him, the experience of lesbian and gay people. And he was so moved by it that he went back after the referendum, went round the country and talked to people and their parents and celebrated the lives that were never public before. And he made a play of it. And then, he made a book of it. And that book was launched and the Taoiseach launched the book. And then with Colin Murphy, he made a play of it. And the play went around Ireland, it went to the North, it went to the UK. And And it was just this extraordinary sense of justice, I think, that he had, that he was trying to right this wrong that he had suddenly seen and realised. And I think he was extraordinary.
OK, well said. Well said. As Brian Sheen, co-director of the successful Yes Equality campaign. Peter Costello. Peter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were inspired by the beginning of the programme where somebody, I know it's a day when people often find it difficult to put words together, but people have done it in poetry, and you want to do, you've written a piece about Charlie as well, Peter.
I wrote a piece about Charlie, yes, this morning after hearing the news.
Okay. Off you go. So what, have you a name on it?
Well, it's just Charlie Bird, rest in peace.
Yeah, well done. Okay, Peter, it's yours. Okay. The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. We knew that it was coming, but still, I have to say, it's very hard to imagine. Charlie Bird has passed away. He's been a big part of our lives for many, many years, and in the last part of his journey, we share his sorrow and his tears. We knew both sides of Charlie, the man that went away and reported news from Haiti, from the Philippines and the USA. He was born and reared in Dublin, and as a boy, he got a job doing the news round for a local shop to earn his first few bob. He started work with RTE back in 1974. He was a researcher for the Late Late Show, 7 days and many more. He quickly climbed the ladder. He was good at what he'd done. The proof of that last statement is in all the awards he's won. He was constantly in our living rooms reporting news from far and wide, updating us on wars and famines, or if someone head of state had died. Then about 12 years ago, he retired from RTE. He looked forward to his new life. From his work, he now was free. He enjoyed his newfound freedom, living happily, having fun. And then there came a bombshell in October 21. He was diagnosed with motor neuron, a terrible disease. It took the wind out of his sails and brought him to his knees. He knew it was a death sentence. The question was how long. When he finally got to grips with it, he took action and was strong. He expressed his feelings openly, there and Tiger by his side. He appeared in lots of talk shows, where at times he laughed and cried. He touched the hearts of everyone as he explained what he's going through. It brought it home to all of us. This could be me or you. Then on the Late Late Show one night, he said donations he would seek for MND and Pieta House as he planned to climb the reek. Some thoughts of this was wishful thinking, and the sickness would take its toll. But on April 2022, he proudly achieved his goal. He motivated people from north, south, east and west. They all joined in behind him and together passed the test. This was a massive challenge, but he never once was fazed. And as a result of this amazing feat, $3.5 million had been raised. All through this terrible illness, Charlie has stood tall. He has spread the hand of friendship to people, one and all. Condolences to his family. We send them all our love. We know Charlie has a special place prepared for him up above. He has touched the hearts of millions. And even though he's gone, he will never be forgotten. For his legacy will live on. That's it, Joe. Thanks.
Well said, Peter Costello. This is the reaction Charlie Bird got when he reached the heights of Pro Patrick. And it's a reaction he deserves.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.